This is Marcia Savage with SearchFinancialSecurity.com. I recently met with Andrew Baer, an attorney and founder of Baer Business Law, about recent changes in state data protection laws. In this interview, he talks about some of the new requirements and offers some advice on how organizations can deal with changing data protection laws. He also discusses the potential for a national data breach law. Listen in. I think you'll find it an interesting discussion. Thanks for joining us today, Andrew.
No problem, Marcia.
Now, some new state data protection laws have recently taken effect or will take effect soon. Let's start with Massachusetts. What's the status of its data protection law?
Massachusetts just revised its data protection law in August, and the new law is about to go into effect. Massachusetts had what up till that time was the most stringent data protection law in the country, a very top-down, technology-specific, prescriptive approach requiring all businesses that owned or licensed data about personal data, rather, about Massachusetts residents to have a detailed written information security program with computer system security requirements such as rigid personnel access control requirements, detailed inventory of all systems and storage media containing personal information about Massachusetts residents, and of course the encryption of all information transmitted over wirelessly or over open public networks or stored on portable devices containing personal information of Massachusetts residents. It was a very stringent law imposing potentially difficult and extremely costly requirements for small and medium-sized businesses who would be caught within its net. However, the Massachusetts Office of Consumer Affairs and Business Regulation recently heard the howls of outrage going up from small and medium-sized businesses and revised the law, revised the regulation in August to be more flexible, risk-based, and in accordance with the FTC's safeguards rule. Specifically, the new regulation now takes into account the size, nature, and scope of business, the amount of resources available for data security measures, and the need for security and confidentiality of personal information. The onerous computer system security requirements that I alluded to earlier are now qualified. You only have to implement them to the extent technically feasible. And the encryption requirements have been loosened. This is extremely significant. In the previous version of the Massachusetts regulation, 128-bit or higher encryption standard was prescribed by the statute, but that has been dropped. Now you need only to use encryption technology using cryptographic keys and appropriate key management mechanisms. Again, the idea is for the regulation to be more risk-based, taking into account the needs, concerns, risks, and resources of the individual business, and to be technology neutral rather than prescriptive.
And there's a new compliance deadline, too, I believe. It's pushed up to sometime in March, perhaps?
March, yes. March 1st, 2010, previously January 1st, 2010, and that in itself was pushed back from a date in 2009. In addition to the compliance deadline for all aspects of the regulation being pushed back, there's a bit of a grandfathering of the vendor management requirements. One of the requirements of the regulation is to have contracts with vendors who will access personal information on your behalf that basically requires them to use procedures to protect the security of that information consistent with a statute. And there was a great concern about what happens with long-standing vendor relationships that were negotiated years ago and don't contain these protections. And so now, basically, any contract entered into prior to March 1st, 2012 will be deemed to be in compliance provided it was also entered into before March 1st, 2010. So again, the contractual vendor management requirements of the regulation have essentially been made prospective rather than retroactive, which would have been enormously disruptive to the businesses of organizations required to comply.
So now I understand Nevada has implemented some new data protection requirements. Can you talk about that?
Certainly. Nevada in May passed into law Senate Bill 227, which is one of the more stringent and prescriptive, i.e. technology-specific, data security laws in the nation. Unlike the Massachusetts regulation, however, Nevada Senate Bill 227 is focused solely on encryption instead of including broad-based requirements about an information security program. What Nevada Senate Bill 227 requires is the encryption of personal information about Nevada residents that is transmitted other than by a facsimile, transmitted electronically outside of the secure system of an enterprise, or is stored on portable devices that are themselves moved outside of the logical and physical controls of the enterprise or its data storage contractor. So in plain English, information that's transmitted over the internet or wirelessly or is put on a portable device such as a laptop, a cell phone, PDA, other mobile device, and moved outside of the company's firewall, essentially, now has to be encrypted. The encryption does require the use of cryptographic keys and appropriate key management technology. So it's encryption in the way we think of the term, but there is no specific technology standard. Nevertheless, the Nevada law is still a bit more stringent than the revised Massachusetts regulation in that the encryption technology has to be consistent with the guidelines of an established standard-setting body. So it can't be any key or any encryption technology you choose to use. It has to be something that that is recognized as effective and best practices by a standard-setting body. So, for example, you know, if you used WEP wireless encryption technology of the type that got TJ Maxx in trouble a couple of years ago, that might not be deemed in compliance with Nevada Senate Bill 227 because that's recognized as no longer consistent with the standards of established standard-setting bodies. For example, the PCI Security Council has specifically warned against the use of that technology going forward. So if you're using that, you might not be in compliance with Nevada Senate Bill 227. Something else I should mention about the Nevada law is it's applicable to organizations, quote-unquote, doing business in Nevada. People looking at this law should not have a limited view of what that means. It doesn't require you to have a physical installation or employees in Nevada in order to be covered by the law and subject to its compliance requirement. Basically, in addition to organizations that have a physical presence in Nevada, if you in fact have any Nevada customers, for example, if you're an online business and you sell to Nevada and you know you're doing that, you would most likely be caught within the net of organizations doing business in Nevada. So this is a law with potentially nationwide applicability, particularly given Nevada's rapid population and business growth.
Now, California made some updates to its data breach law this summer. Can you talk about that?
Yes. California passed some crucial amendments to its original data breach notification bill, Senate Bill 1386. That bill was the pioneering data breach notification law in the nation, requiring businesses who stored personal information about California residents to promptly issue a data breach notice If there was an unauthorized access of disclosure of information that could potentially harm those individuals. The problem with that law, though, even though it was emulated now in 46 other states, in addition to the District of Columbia, is that it didn't say what had to be in the data breach notice. So what you had is a lot of cautious companies suffering data breaches, spewing forth highly legalistic and vague documents. For example, there has been a breach. We feel some information of yours may have been accessed. We feel the breach may have been caused by this. Here is what we think you should do in terms of notifying the credit reporting agencies to protect yourself from identity theft. A lot of vague, prophylactic, highly legalistic statements that didn't really give people actionable information other than contacting the credit bureau, credit reporting agencies, and just generally putting people on edge. They knew something had happened, but not exactly what. The new law, Senate Bill 20, which is now currently awaiting Governor Schwarzenegger's signature, it's been passed by both houses of the legislature, attempts to set some standards as to the contents of a data breach notice. First thing, that notice has to be in plain English. It has to be understandable, you know, to the average person. Tough requirement for the lawyers, but a good one probably for the consumers. It also has to include certain information to the extent knowable about the nature and effects of the breach. So, for example, at the minimum, the security breach notification has to contain the following information: the name and contact information of the reporting person or business, a list of the types of personal information that were or are reasonably believed to have been the subject of the breach, to the extent knowable information about the date of the breach, whether notification of the breach was delayed as a result of a law enforcement investigation, which the statute allows, a general description of the breach incident, if that information is possible to determine, the toll-free telephone numbers of addresses and addresses of credit reporting agencies, and other information that the reporting entity wants to include. In addition to these requirements, if the breach affects more than 500 California residents as a result of a single breach, an electronic sample copy of the data breach notice has to be sent to the California Attorney General. So basically, tying all these requirements together, the data breach notice has to be readable, and it has to contain the substantive information to the extent knowable about what happened, when it happened, and what information was possibly compromised.
So what should financial firms and other organizations do to deal with these new and changing state requirements?
Two things come to mind. First of all, if you're not already doing this, make sure that personal information that is being sent out over the Internet or wirelessly or is stored on portable devices like laptops is encrypted using an accepted industry standard. You probably, in many cases, are doing that already to comply with federal requirements applicable to financials in the data security area. But if you're not, you should be doing that. That'll help your federal compliance as well as your compliance with these laws. If it becomes too difficult, particularly with respect to the portable devices, ask yourself whether it's even necessary to be able to put personal information on portable devices. Maybe there could be a policy that prohibits that and some sort of remote access to central terminals if people need to work and access personal information would be more the thing. Another crucial area to concentrate on is vendor management. This, too, is an area where there has long been a federal compliance mandate in addition to the more recent state compliance mandate, but it's amazing how many organizations are still struggling to get their arms around this. Basically, you need to investigate your vendors before you sign the contract. Vendors who are going to have access to personal information about your customers or consumers to make sure that they have data security measures in place that are in compliance with your own promises to your customers and the requirements of these statutes. In other words, that they're reasonable and appropriate in light of the nature of the information they're accessing or storing, and that they use encryption when Nevada and Massachusetts, for example, require the use of encryption. You also should, in your written contracts with these entities, require them to comply with these standards, in addition to acknowledging their responsibility for the security of your personal information. In addition, you should include in these contracts ongoing audit and due diligence rights. These statutes, in addition to requiring pre-contract due diligence and written data security assurances in the contracts, also require periodic checks on vendors for PCI compliance, among other things. And that's Nevada, by the way. I failed to mention that before. Nevada actually requires PCI compliance with regard to payment card transactions. So if you're doing business in Nevada, you want to be able to validate your vendor's ongoing PCI compliance even after the contract is signed. And you want to also be able to monitor their data security measures in other areas. You don't have the right to do this unless you include it in your contract. Your vendors will not necessarily open their doors to you out of the goodness of their hearts. So to sum all this up in vendor contract management, pre-contract due diligence, strong data security assurances in the contract itself, particularly with regards to encryption and PCI DSS compliance where required, and a continuing right to audit. Very, very important in order to be able to satisfy the compliance mandate of these statutes.
All right. Well, I guess to wrap up here, what do you see as a potential for a national data breach law, and what might it look like?
There are two interesting bills on the table right now. Congressman Bobby Rush's House of Representatives Bill 2221 and Senator Pat Leahy's Senate Bill 1490. The bills are different in many respects, but they all follow the general California-type framework of requiring an information security program that contains reasonable data security safeguards appropriate to the nature of the information. They also adopt a risk-based approach in determining what is reasonable, and also have data breach notification requirements, also like California. These statutes do not follow the model set by Nevada or the Massachusetts regulation, in that they are generally not prescriptive or technology specific. HR 2221 is, if anything, more technology neutral than Senate Bill 1490. Congressman Rush even included in his bill a requirement that the FTC is strictly prohibited from setting specific technological safeguards and measures in regulating in this area. Both bills also give a presumptive exemption from the data breach notification requirements if the information that is subject to compromise is encrypted. It's important, though, to recognize that both of these encryption presumptions are rebuttable. And basically, in legal language, what that means is if you can show that the level of encryption was not sufficient to was not reasonably sufficient to protect the public and was not reasonable in light of the nature of the information being protected, then having the information encrypted will not, in fact, protect you from having to issue a data breach notice if you suffer a compromise. So while these bills differ in the specifics, broadly speaking, they all follow the California approach, reasonable and appropriate but not technology-specific safeguards, data breach notice with some kind of exemption from a notice requirement if the information is encrypted. I think the chances of one of these bills becoming law sometime in early 2010 is pretty good. I don't see anything happening, though, for the rest of 2009 because Congress has got its hands full working on a little matter called health care.
That's right. Well, Andrew, this has been really helpful. I appreciate all your time today.
Sure. No problem, Marcia.